You know, it's been about a year, right? Montana's recreational marijuana program. Are there problems in that program? It's worth looking at. I've said, you know, a while back, I think if Montana's going to do this, let's take the time, study things, do it right. Did we do that? Well, that's one of the things that was studied by the Economic Affairs Interim Committee. What else? Something here called facial recognition technology, growing privacy concerns, but it can also help law enforcement. So we have that today with State Senator Ken Bogner from Miles City, who chaired that interim committee. And then a bit later on, we'll talk with Carbon County Commissioner Bill Bullock and get an update on how the communities that were affected by this historic Yellowstone flooding in 2022 are going to fare for 2023 today on Voices.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today, 866-627-5483, or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, here's your end of your host, Tom Schultz.
End of something, I'll tell you that. Hey, thanks for being here. It's the end of the week, Friday. Well, maybe not, I guess. I'm glad it's here, but only two more working days this week. Keep hanging in. And if things are working out for you, you've got this Montana weekend to hang in. Good, good. Things are working out. And again, thanks for being here, too. We're two decades strong, working on three. From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. A couple things to look at here. Like I said, a bit later on, happy to have Carbon County Commissioner Bill Bullock join us just to give us an update as we look back at some of the top stories of 2023. Obviously, the flooding probably tops a lot of people's business when it comes to, you know, memorable events for the state of Montana. Those who are walking through it as well, they still have got their cleanup and financial struggles through all of this. We talk about recreation and tourism and the economy for that area, how vital that is to. We're going to get an update on that. You know, I guess as far as things go, when you get hit with that kind of disaster and that kind of flooding, people come together and you keep your chin up. And I think that's what's going on there. That's real good. A lot of things to look at here as we welcome our first guest. And with great thanks, State Senator Ken Bogner joins us of Miles City, Senate District 19 there, and chaired the Economic Affairs Interim Committee, which we'll get into here today. Good morning, Senator. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. I made the move yesterday from Miles City to Helena for the legislative session, so I'm excited for the new year and the legislative session.
Yeah, I know. What are your thoughts there? Like, we've been talking to folks, and one of the things that surprises them, or maybe not, you know, the $4,300 bills, I should say, in the hopper right now. It's going to be busy.
Going to be very busy. It's a lot of bills. but, you know, we're excited. And unprecedented session, really. Supermajority for Republicans, $2 billion budget surplus, and 4,000 bill draft requests. It is going to be chaos. So we're going to hit the ground running. And, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things to talk about. I want to go into this Economic Affairs Interim Committee, some of the work, and I'm looking at here, too. You look at facial recognition technology. First of all, why did this land in Economic Affairs?
So a little background for your listeners who don't know.
Hey, Ken, hang on. Before you give us some background, we're having trouble with the connection right now. I don't know if you're in a bad area on the phone or...
Okay.
Oh, that's a little better. That's a little better.
Okay. All right. Let me move here. Not the best reception in the Capitol, but find a spot. If that's good, now I'll continue on.
It was a little better just a second or two ago. I tell you, I can take a break early, but let's continue on here because I want to get into this. I mean, this whole facial recognition thing, it's technology that's rather advanced, and I think it's advanced beyond our understanding of how to fairly and effectively use it.
Yes, absolutely. So in the Economic Affairs Committee, we have been assigned a study that was passed by Representative Kay Sullivan.
Hey, Ken, I'm sorry. I'm going to take this break because we're going to have to find a better connection. Or else it just won't work. So, yeah, thank you for that. Well, come on. A lot to go. I mean, law enforcement is using facial recognition technology effectively, and we want to make sure that tool sticks around.
Montana, there's no place else like it. The vibe is different here. At Stockman Bank, we get it. This is our home, too. Our focus is on Montana and only Montana. As Montana's largest privately held family-owned bank, we put you, our customers, and communities at the center of all we do. So when you're looking for a local homegrown Montana bank, look no further. Stockman Bank, Montana's brand of banking. Member FDIC.
Is your alcohol or drug use starting to affect everyday life? Are you planning your day around your next drink? Are you hiding drinking or drug use from friends and family? These are common signs that your drinking or drug use might be part of a larger health challenge called addiction. Addiction is a chronic disease made worse by excessive use of alcohol or drugs. Most times, quitting on your own becomes impossible. That's where Rimrock can help. The largest facility in the region, Rimrock is ready to build you a custom roadmap to recovery. Rimrock has numerous treatment choices, including medical detoxification, inpatient treatment, residential living, and outpatient options. Rimrock offers a full-service mental health center designed to treat the whole person and continue with you after you leave treatment, including telehealth wherever you might live. Start your recovery journey with Rimrock, and let's work together to create your roadmap to recovery. Call 800-227-3953. Or visit rimrock.org.
These days, seems anyone with a website can sell you a new car. But your Northwest Ford dealers know there's more to it. More service than selling. More helping hand than just handshakes. More confidence than computer clicks. And for decades, we've been a friend in the neighborhood. So whether you need help today or tomorrow, we'll be there. We're your Northwest Ford dealers. Stop by today or visit buyfordnow.com.
All right, we'll catch up with State Senator Ken Bogner here very shortly. Happy New Year's to you. I know Cody. Cody's a rocker at heart, I think. This is YouTube. Yep. Thank you, and Happy New Year. Back with more of Voices of Montana in the Capitol, where Ken Bogner is talking to us from, and we'll get connected here. He's chair of the Economic Affairs Interim Committee. They looked at this facial recognition technology. It was one of their assigned studies. They also looked at benefits cliff in public assistance programs. I got a report here. You can go and get reports, and they'll inform you. I mean, they're done by legislative staff, and they're for these committees to inform when it comes to making policy decisions about facial recognition technology. Another one here was SJ31, the study of the implementation of Montana's recreational marijuana program, and I think that's huge to look at, because you've got it's our first year recreational program, and you wonder if there are problems here and there that we can do a better job with. Mostly it's on the administrative side of things, and I know from the law enforcement side they're looking at getting some resources in place, because they're anticipating problems in certain areas, and I think that's smart, because we have seen that how many now? There's, I think, 47 of 50 states have some sort of legalized marijuana, whether it's medical, mostly it's medical. I think the number that have legalized recreational marijuana is maybe, I'm going to get that wrong. You know, it's either 17, it might be 27. It might be like half the states, but I recall, and I probably have that somewhere in front of me, waiting for Ken Bogner's call back here as they're looking for a good place to get some reception in the Capitol. Continue. This study, more on it here on facial recognition technology. I can give a little more background, too, when you talk about it. There's two aspects of it. It's for verification and also facial identification. And verification is that one-to-one type of matching, which is I think maybe a lot more safer than that one to many type of facial recognition of use, which is what law enforcement does. And law enforcement has found a lot of good uses for it, like fighting human trafficking and counterterrorism. They use it also in airport security. On the commercial side of things, it's like unlocking mobile phones or paying even for services without cash, home security. Those are some of the things that were uncovered as the committee looked at that. And there were some recommendations that they couldn't all agree on. But we welcome back State Senator Ken Bogner here, who chaired this Economic Affairs Interim Committee. Hey, thanks, Ken, for chasing down a landline for us there in the Capitol. Is it pretty quiet right now, or is it still pretty busy in the Capitol?
It's pretty quiet. People are starting to move in today, making, you know, filling their desks and stuff. But it's still pretty quiet. Everyone will really show up on Monday, our first day.
Yeah.
So,
Yes. I gave a little bit of background. If the, you know, some of those things that, that stand out to you, Ken, as you looked at this, things about facial recognition technology, and I think you're on the forefront more so than a lot of other legislators, so maybe some of this stuff you were aware of, but what should the public know? What stands out to you that we need to know?
Well, this was, I think, a very important study that we got in Economic Affairs Committee because it is the future, and you know, it's here now, but it really is the future as the technology gets better. And we learned, you know, three things in committee. We learned that there's three types of facial recognition technology. There's continuous surveillance. So the real time identification of individuals as they're videoed. The next would be one to many verification. And that would be taking an image and cross-referencing a database to find a match. And then the other type would be one-to-one verification. And that's comparing two images against each other to verify that it's the same person. And we learned that in Montana, there's no real guidelines around that. Mm. And that's a problem. And so we need to figure out as a state which one of those three abilities do we want the government to have. There's pros and cons for each, and so that's what we studied. We had a couple options, but the committee felt like we needed a little more time to really understand it. So we didn't pass a committee bill out, but there's going to be some legislation come this legislative session.
Do you think... where is the misuse most high, I guess?
Yeah, that would be the continuous surveillance. And I would say 99% of the legislators agree that that should be banned by use of the government. You know, government, what we've seen during the pandemic especially, that some of the abuses that the government can have with continuous surveillance, you know, following people, tracking people, seeing if they went to a pharmacy or if they got a vaccination or if they went to the gun store. Those, you know, the government shouldn't be tracking that. And we've seen it with other governments too. China, for example, that's how it has such control over its citizens, is facial recognition technology and the continuous surveillance. And we want to avoid that. And I would say both Republicans and Democrats are entirely on board with banning the continuous surveillance portion. It's when you get into the one-to-many and one-to-one that there's a lot of discussion on what we should do.
Do other states have a handle on this, or is it just kind of all over the book?
It is all over the book. People are from all states are trying to figure out what to do. There have been some states that have been done an outright ban of facial recognition technology. There is one, maybe two, I believe, that have gone back and said, you know, there are some benefits to this, so we don't want a complete ban. We want law enforcement, for example, to be able to use that technology to fight crime or, you know, to prevent unemployment insurance. We saw here in Montana that the one-to-one verification saved the state millions of dollars in unemployment insurance fraud over the pandemic.
And I know from a lump, and you know, I gotta take another break here. That's okay. Kind of how it goes. But I want to come back and talk more about how good is it for law enforcement in terms of apprehensions. And I also noticed that, you know, over this pandemic, it's taught us, Senator, to collaborate better, to communicate better. And I know that state agencies are using some of this technology to do that. So we'll get into the pros and cons a little bit more when it comes to our law enforcement opportunities here with State Senator Ken Bogner. We come on back with more Voices in a bit.
It's that time of year, time to get your seasonal flu shot. The flu shot changes each year because the flu virus changes, so it's important to get yours every year. The flu shot protects against influenza, a severe respiratory illness, and its complications. The best time to get your flu shot is right now, and it's available at doctor's offices, pharmacies, and local health departments across Montana. Visit Facebook/Health406 for more information. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services.
Welcome back. State Senator Ken Bogner with us here on Voices of Montana. You want to get a comment in here or a voice message, it's 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. Again, back more with State Senator Ken Bogner, chair of the Economic Affairs Interim Committee, as we look at a couple of studies that they were assigned. I mentioned them. One of them, the benefits cliff and public assistance programs. The implementation of Montana's recreational marijuana program was another. And then facial recognition technology. Are we using it well? Are there privacy concerns? Are we violating privacy? And I suppose, Ken, that's kind of hard to figure out because privacy laws are somewhat, objective, I think, in our Constitution, and different courts have ruled on them a bit differently. So I assume it's difficult in that regard.
It is, and especially when individuals, value their privacy different. So it's something you really have to work through in creating a blanket privacy for the entire state. So, my perspective is the more privacy you have, the better. If you want to give that up to a company, an organization, a government, that's on you, but you should have those privacy protections.
And where is it being used most effectively? How good is it? Like, I'm assuming that when crimes are committed or fraud in certain investigations, timing is always key. And having good facial recognition technology resources available can help in early apprehension of some perpetrators. Is that correct? Where are we at with law enforcement on this?
Exactly. And that's where the pros are. If there's a kidnapping or if there is a serious crime, time matters. Terrorism, making sure that you can identify individuals in the moment of a crime or, right after or right before. So that's, that's where the pros are, how it can be very useful. But because it can be useful, there's opportunity for, exploiting that. And, it can be a great tool for law enforcement, like I mentioned earlier, for preventing unemployment insurance fraud. But with that power comes, responsibility to make sure that it's not abused.
Let's take a quick call here. Skip is listening in Hamilton, KLYQ. Skip, thanks. You're on the air, Voices of Montana, with Senator Ken Bogner.
Thank you, Tom. And Ken, I know some history about you that I think is quite wonderful. You were the lieutenant gubernatorial candidate with Dr. O, and you. I saw you over here in Hamilton at Lincoln Reagan, and a lot of people were really impressed with all the things that you have in mind. And, sir, also, thank you for your service as a military officer. In the facial recognition area and other things having to do with law enforcement, what can that kind of device do if in maybe strengthening the security at our schools? And I know that you're on also the education committee. Somebody that is my representative here is David Beatty. He's the chairman of that committee. And how can we expand on something like this ability to do a better job, even for our young people in our schools, and maybe set an example with this kind of stuff? And I'll just say Happy New Year, and I hope this session is going to be something. And I'll just leave it there. Thank you, sir.
It's always something. Thanks, Skip. I appreciate that. Ken?
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words and the support and a great question. We actually had an emergency meeting in Economic Affairs Committee to discuss this very issue. What is the role in schools? Especially with some violence around the country, we want to protect our children. But there's more than just physical protection, right in the moment. We want to make sure that if surveillance is being used in school, that it's not hackable, that someone can't go in, you know, hack a computer system, get the data for individual students, and then find that student outside of the classroom. That is a very big concern. We don't want that to happen. You know, we're fine with having cameras in the schools to make sure that you're monitoring the classrooms, preventing, you know, the safety of teachers, students. But when you cross that line of real-time identification of students, that's where we have concerns. Mm-hmm. So we had this emergency meeting, and it's, to be honest, it's something we're still working through, where we want to draw that line of allowing cameras in our schools and continuous surveillance. Very good question. We're working through it, and we hope to, you know, have something we can all agree on as we come out of this legislative session.
Thank you for that, Skip. And like you said, Ken, I appreciate that. You know, things, you do want considerations for public safety in the moment, but I appreciate those consequences that we often call them unintended consequences of what can happen down the road as well. So got to consider those. Great job. Commercial use for facial recognition technology. That, I'm not, where's that at? I mean, that's another one of those Pandora boxes that's going to be opening here.
It really is. And that came up in committee, you know, where should we, I mean, this is a huge issue and there's no guidelines in Montana. In the committee, we decided to, you know, the biggest concern is the public use of government. So that's a great question. There is, you know, everyday uses that are becoming more and more available, from everything from just unlocking your phone to self-driving cars that can, you know, monitor your expression on your face and if you're sleeping. So benefits, obviously, but we have seen just last week a woman who tried to get into Madison Square Garden in New York, and she couldn't because a private company had continuously surveilled her and saw that she didn't have a vaccine and wasn't allowed in the building. Great question on how we tackle that. I hope to this coming session, but it is a Pandora's box, and it is a very, I would say, a big issue that takes a lot of work, and it's going to take multiple sessions. So I hope to get a foundation started this legislative session, but it is going to be, you know, decades of work as the technology continues to advance.
Yes, and that's an approach I can appreciate as well, because when you're trying to codify or put down some kind of guardrails for something like privacy, you really, really want to do it right, because when you look at how courts have gone off in a lot of different directions when it comes to privacy concerns, and you noted that earlier as well, you know, something could set precedence and it could misestablish that, you know, so I appreciate that, and I'm sure that's part of the discussion. Ken Bogner is with us here. He did serve in the United States Marine, and thank you, Skip, for bringing that up. I wanted to mention that, too, so thanks for the service there, Middle East service as well in the Iraq War, and then bachelor's degree in political science from Columbia, master's from Middlesex University, so congratulations on that, now serving in the Montana legislature. Let's move over. I know there's a lot to do, and it'll be part of the discussion going forward in this 2023 session. I want to look at another study that you guys did in the Economic Affairs Interim Committee. And that's it's a clever title here, Overseeing a Budding Industry, Montana's First Year Recreational Marijuana Program. I have said, and your thoughts on this, you know, so the people wanted it. We've got it here. The legislature accepts that and wants to move forward. And I think, okay, we can do it better than other states. Where are we at? Are we doing it better? You know, when you look at this, there was a lot of thought, Ken, that went into it early, too. So maybe, is it pretty clean? Is there a lot of cleanup that needs to be done?
There's some cleanup, but we knew that would happen. Like you said, it's here. And we had learned lessons from the medicinal side and standing that industry up. And it wasn't as smooth as we had hoped standing that up. So we took some lessons learned and wanted to implement it better, and better than other states have been doing. So we felt like we had a really good bill last session, but we knew it would take a lot of changes. So we went through in the interim. The committee listened mostly to the Cannabis Control Division. They're the one tasked with enforcing the new law, and took their advice. It's going well, considering it's an entire industry and that it's still illegal at the federal side. But there were things we needed to clean up. Everything from making sure definitions were more clear, clarification on tier levels, who does the testing in the research labs. So we're getting close. We've got a cleanup bill, HB 128, if you want to follow that through the legislature. But we're feeling pretty good where we're at. We do, in that bill, we have a moratorium on new licenses because we just want to make sure that we have a couple more years to really make sure that we get this right and don't screw it up.
So, and I can appreciate that as well. HB 128 to keep an eye on. As far as an industry, well, I'll tell you what, I've got like less than a minute now. I want to get your quick thoughts on the governor's budget. You like it? It's going to be tweaked a little bit here and there. Where at?
Well, the legislature likes to put his fingerprint on the budget, but we think it's a great start. Gets some of that taxpayer dollars back to the taxpayers and, has long-term tax relief. That is big, especially with inflation the way it is. So great start, loving where the governor's head's at, and we're going to work to make it better where we can in the legislature.
Super. Ken, have a successful session. May it be one of, great joy and progress and, friendship as well. And I look forward to having you here, and I appreciate that public service, Ken.
Well, thank you. And I hope to give you an update on facial recognition technology as we move forward in the session.
Oh, yeah. I got your number, dude. I'll be calling, okay?
Okay, great.
Thanks. State Senator Ken Bogner, Miles City's KMTA. Back with more Voices in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Western Ranch Supply designs custom corral systems that are both affordable and portable. Mix and match your favorite brands like Preferred, Winkle, or Lynn. Maybe you want a silencer chute with 2W panels or any other special requests. Western Ranch Supply will design and deliver for you. A custom corral system will be an investment that is sure to return. Give us a call to get started or visit WesternRanchSupply.com.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
I think it got us all emotionally. The images of flooding. Welcome back. Thanks for being here. We're an objective perspective. We keep trying anyway, right? Tom Schultz alongside. It is, if you want to join us here, give us a text message. That line's always open. I don't give it out there enough, I suppose. 781-627-5483. That's the text line. It's 866-627-5483. Also, get a hold of me here, too, if you've got ideas for a program or thoughts. I got a message from a gentleman named Mark and thought I went out of bounds a little bit yesterday. Mark, thank you for that. You're wrong, but thank you. and I'll be responding soon. Anyway, let's go to this. We saw these images, and we know the damage. I think in Montana, if you've lived here any amount of time, in any place, you're going to run into areas or periods where there's severe flooding. But to see what we saw in Red Lodge and in Park County and around, the Livingston, West Yellowstone, Gardner area, all those areas from this historic flooding event, and they're still cleaning up. Let's welcome Commissioner Bill Bullock for Carbon County. In that Red Lodge area. Good morning, Bill. How are you, sir?
Very well, Tom. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I can't imagine the devastation. You're a public official, and you get there for a reason. You have to have some empathy and love and sacrifice for the community. It had to be hard on you. Talk about now that you're 6 months plus into this, where are we at?
Well, that's a Well, you're about hitting the million-dollar question. I know. I'm going to be honest with you, you know, and that's it's a constantly moving target, you know. And I, you know, work as a commissioner in Carbon County. You know, I've been a member of this community for a very long time. In some of my past, I was worked for the state of Montana, the Department of Justice. I was a state trooper for 20 years. Worked here, stationed here, very involved in my community, you know, and seeing, knowing, being part of it. You know, it makes it especially hard when you see your neighbors, you see your community, an area, that a place that you sacrifice for, just get absolutely turned inside out by a natural disaster. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
Yeah. And then, you know, and again, from your perspective, you have to lead. So you want to be emotional, but you also have to be pragmatic. How are the citizens now? Were they obviously, it's okay for them to be a little more emotional, but they too have to be pragmatic and into this recovery effort. How are they doing?
Well, I mean, everybody's hanging in there, you know, and that's one thing. I mean, this is a strong community. Carbon County is a strong place. We go and have been through, you know, we look back over the last, well, I've been in my position since 2017, and we look over the last 4 or 5 years, and there's, you know, as bad as it sounds, we have been through it all. You know, we look back, we went through the COVID thing. We had the infestation of locusts and grasshoppers here the last few years. We had a fire back in 2021. Then this in 2022, we don't have a lot left we haven't been through. And I shudder to even mention what's left to happen in the natural disaster ring. But folks recognize that, and people are strong. You know, you got to be a little tough just to live here and live in Montana anyway, just because of, you know, it's an uncompromising land. It's a place of great beauty, great opportunity, great recreation. You know, there's a reason we all live here. But the sacrifice you make is you've got to try to live here, and you've got to put yourself out, and you got to work a little harder, just because the nature and the environment and climate we got to deal with.
Yeah, I like that. I can appreciate that. You got to gear up for these sorts of things. Were there, and we talked an awful lot about resources that were made available, and you've got FEMA, and you've got the state, and you've got the county, and then you've got volunteer. You know, look at all of that. And when you look at, we had a historic flood. There are programs that provide resources. Did all of that work well? Were some areas that you think you can make more improvements on to get, well, just better assistance?
Well, so we reached out early, you know, and I got it. And I'm an independent. I'm a nonpartisan. I'll be honest. I've been a conservative my whole life, but at the end of the day, early on, and it goes back to who you're connected to and who you can reach out to. And leave politics aside, but I've got to give a lot of credit. I have, and I will continue to Senator Dane's office and his field staff. They were there that Sunday night when everything broke loose. Mm-hmm. I recall having a conversation with Mr. Dane's, and you know, we were going back and forth, and I was describing what was going on and the devastation that was currently occurring. And to his credit, he said, you know, this is a great conversation, but I need to be there on the ground. I'll be there in the morning. I'm bringing the director of FEMA. I'll be out there in a day. Wow. And to his word, he was. And I'm very appreciative of that, you know. And but, you know, you look back at your partnering and you know, your connections, you know, and we have, you know, I'm very blessed because I have great, great people I work with. I mean, the best that I've. Anywhere. You know, when we, early on the night, that Sunday night in June, we came up with, formulated a plan, kind of finalized it the following Monday morning, cooperated with private contractors, truck drivers, dump trucks, excavators, and the like, and with the state of Montana. We worked directly with them and cooperated with them, and we had basically a unified response between county, state, and private to really get some things rolling. And you know, we did a lot of work in a very short amount of time. We may have maybe heightened some expectations given the rapid response we did and the effectiveness in what we did, but it had to happen. But those federal partnering, and that's some of the hangover, you know, the working in a waterway anywhere, not just in Montana, is it's a three-lock box of information and resources and agencies and regulatory oversight, of which, in my view, the communication between all of them has to improve. Mm-hmm. The agencies do the regulating, and the water don't really communicate with one another, and one has a set of rules they have to go by. And Another one has a set of rules that they have to go by, and they don't communicate and interface those rules so that the layperson going and trying to get permitting to go in the water, they have to make five stops. Now, those five stops don't tell you that there's more stops to make. You know, you stop at one, but there's no mention that there's four other stops and four other permits and four other things you've got to do. So it's frustrating to the private landowner. That's kind of where some things are right now. We asked very early on, especially, something like Army Corps and DNRC, you know, let's staff things up because we've got to get through this because our construction season is, we're done in September. I mean, we can get 4 feet of snow in September and we're pretty much shut out of water work. And we made that very early on and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So you're looking at, in some cases, 3 to 4 months for a permit. Well, in that time, it doesn't do any good before the next runoff. Mm. And so there's a lot of frustration on that end. We're working through that. They have stepped back up and restaffed and tried to shore up their staffing and provision of what they've got to do on their permitting side. But it's not seamless. It's not efficient. And it's troublesome. I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, that's where a lot of frustration lies right now.
Well, and I talked with an Army Corps of Engineer official and about this very situation, because got a call from somebody in the area wanting to, you know, what's the process for getting in there and shoring up my property that's been damaged. So just as you described, we only have a certain kind of timeline. They had indicated that they were going to be more willing. They had indicated that, that they have a process in place that's going to allow this kind of cleanup a little more expeditiously. That didn't happen. So that's I appreciate you filling us in on that information, because then we can come back when we chat with them again, and relay that. Because you're right, that's one of the important things there, is all this communication needs to coordinate, and it's harder than people think. So I think some of it did happen from my seat here, media or this talk show position, but thank you for that. What about these financial resources? They talk about for fences or for homes, and there's a cap and there's qualifications and things like that. Give us an overview 6+ months later about how all of that has come into effect and helped your community recover or not.
So, and again, this, and I look at Red Lodge because this is where I live and this is where I spend the majority of my time, but the generosity of folks, especially here, never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah.
You know, they were, we worked through our local community foundation and, specific to, volunteering and things like that and donations, and they had instances. It was not uncommon for them to get a check for $50,000, which is, I think that's impressive. And there was not just one or two, there was a lot of that. And so utilizing some of those things, and some of the sideboards put on both by our commission and working with our community foundation, because right, wrong, or indifferent, reality is in these situations, there can be bad actors, and trying to shore up against that, we were trying to focus these donations and voluntary money offerings to those most needed. And so we kind of pulled, it wasn't a big number. Matter of fact, I don't think it was more than two or three, but trying to make sure that those funds don't go to a vacation rental owner or something like that. May they go to somebody that needs it at their home to continue living where they are, not something to shore up a rental or something like that, but little anecdotes like that, it's being put to use. It's trying to be put to use as frugal as possible and trying to apply everywhere. And going back to the ag side, I had a conversation very early on with Tina Stetson over by Fromberg, and set up specific to the ag relief side of things, a fund, created a nonprofit through voluntary work through an attorney here in town, and got that set up so that they could take care of some of those things, because the overall overreaching impact of this disaster can't be overstated. I mean, this was a regional event. Everything was, if you lived along the river or not, you were impacted. I mean, you were impacted from here all the way to Gardner, that the whole Yellowstone region for Montana was just hammered by this thing. But trying to get everything set up, and I think you did a fair job in doing so to address the needs of all the different groups that are there. And I know the One Valley Ag, looking at the numbers the other day, they were pretty close to $300,000 if they were efficiently able to dole out and get some of those, you know, those costs for fencing and trying to get the ag community to stay on their feet, because we are an ag-based county, and that's our main employer, you know, and going back to their needs and what they have to live, you know, our irrigation systems were completely annihilated, both in the Rock Creek drainage, the East Rosebud drainage, and the Clark's Fork of the Yellowstone River drainage. That takes a lot of money, but they're working through it, and they're getting those things shored back up, but a lot of time. And but it, I think it worked as best as it could.
Good. Yeah, and I know that, as the governor would say, we can always do better. But it's great, you know, it's tough to go through that, but it's good to have that experience and that analysis, and thanks for sharing that. Got to come on back and talk about the ag industry again. That irrigation systems piqued my interest, and then the rec industry. We're with Commissioner Bill Bullock from Carbon County, and back with more in a bit.
Our kids love to play. Whether they're playing house or playing dress-up, they love to imitate you. You're setting an example. Make sure it's one you can live with, and one your children can live a long, healthy life with, too. If you want to quit smoking or vaping, call the Montana Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit quitnowmontana.com. You can do it. We can help. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services.
Monday, we're taking a holiday. Best of. Tuesday, we're at the Capitol for Chamber Days at the Capitol. Tom Schultz back alongside here. Thanks for being along. We've got Bill Bullock, Commissioner Bill Bullock from Carbon County, as we just have a couple of minutes looking back at Red Lodge and the recovery effort. Bill, again, thank you so much for being here. Boy, when I hear you talk about the irrigation system, and I've been curious about that, you know, the ag industry taking its lumps in this as well. You know, go into that a little bit, because there's it's just not a ditch. I mean, it's complicated to get that straightened out.
Well, and that's, you know, and looking at this, you know, when you backing out, you know, the higher view of everything, in reality, the truth of the matter is Rock Creek Basin, it's closed basin. All the water's obligated by water rights. And, you know, when you look at it, it's regulated by a dam up at Glacier Lake, south of town, and it goes to the confluence of the Clark's Fork of the Yellowstone, North Joliet at Rockville there. And a lot of years, because of the water usage and the obligation, a lot of that water in Rock Creek doesn't even make it to the confluence of the Clark's Fork of the Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. But when this event happened, it moved, it took out, it annihilated headgates, everything bringing water out of the creek. And the same for the Clark's Fork of the Yellowstone over by Bridger and Fromberg, you know, the Orchard Canal and places like that. It was annihilated. And specific, I can give you several cases of where there was thousands and thousands of acres that were not irrigated and were not hayed. And people are looking at trying to either cut down or get rid of their herds because they couldn't grow enough feed to get through winter this year. So, you know, it's a big impact, but you go back to that too, because of the nature of what we are. And these waterways, you know, a lot of those aquifers and the like that recharge homes in some of these rural areas were dry because they didn't go down these irrigation ditches and backfill these water areas where there was water. And there was a lot of people without water for the majority of the summer and still don't have it. Mm. And so, you look at the total picture of this stuff and the impacts to it. And again, anecdotally, talking about the movement of this river specific to Rock Creek, you know, it's moved in some places. The water is 80 to 100 feet away from a headgate, and it's 5 feet below where it used to go into the headgate.
Mm.
And so that's a tremendous task and a very intricate process to get that permitted correctly, to get that water back where it needs to go, and then get the time and the work to do it. And there's been some done. There's been some recovery efforts done, but there's still a lot holding now because
Commissioner, out of time, but we'll keep on track of that one with you, okay? And have a happy new year. Thanks for being on today.
Happy new year. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Talk to you down the road. And you guys have a good one, too.
And not necessarily those of this station, sponsors for Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.